It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
If I angle it just right, the reflection of the computer is on my glasses. And in theory, the reflection includes the reflection of my computer on my glasses. And inside that reflection would include the reflection of the computer on my glasses in that reflect, and on and on and on.
Mm.
So that's an Easter egg, I guess. I don't know how that works. So, all right. We'll get into it eventually, that you have been gallivanting around the Southwest doing, I don't know, ayahuasca trips or something, whatever. While you were gallivanting, I was securing the legacy of our media empire.
Oh.
I was innovating. So I think we all know when it comes to podcasts, the gold standard, the moneymaker is true crime podcasts. There's just tons of them. And everybody loves them, and they don't have to be good. And we're at the point where we're making TV shows about fans of true crime podcasts. It's a thing. But as we all know, I'm not a fan of true crime. I am also not a fan of research. And it occurred to me, what if the truth isn't the appeal so much as the crime? I know what you're thinking. Let's go out and do some crimes. I mean, that was my first thought too, but there's a logistical issue there. Sure. No, we turn this into a fake true crime podcast.
A fake crime podcast?
Yes. We invent scenario and characters and some small town somewhere, because it's always in a small town somewhere, and somebody gets killed and somebody else is arrested for it, but some people believe it didn't happen. And then after a few episodes, we invent sudden new evidence that can, and like, and because it's fake, we can really get the beats right, because we get to decide when the new evidence is uncovered, like just at the right moment, that kind of thing. So we can do every bit of a true crime podcast, except we made it all up.
So a police procedural podcast.
Fuck. Yeah, I think that's what it is.
That you described a police procedural exactly.
Well, there went last week. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that is bespoke for each listener. You get a customized version of this podcast. So if you are listening to this podcast and you don't hear us talking a lot about all the cool shit you've been doing, that's on you. I'm Tony.
And I'm William. This is episode 583.
For those of you just joining us, welcome. Let me give you a quick rundown here. We have a hat. It is magic in that it has its own email address. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. People write in. We've had a few more lately. That's nice. Still could use more, but we've got some more. That's good. They write into that email address, TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com, with whatever the crap they feel like. The hat magically, all on its own, forwards us emails. and we read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the show, except the parts that aren't, which is most of it. Now, tell us about your ayahuasca fueled bender in Phoenix.
It's funny because when I do something like this and I meet a whole bunch of new people, you know, it'll sometimes come up that I've been doing a podcast for 11 years, which people are kind of impressed with at first.
same with me. People are impressed, not impressed enough to listen. They're impressed like this. They're like, oh, 11 years. I'm like, yep. We only ever missed one episode. And then we stuck an old one on there. They're like, oh, wow. And maybe if they're trying to impress me, they're like, what's it called? Magical Talking Hat. You can go to magicaltalkinghat.com, find out about it. And you're like, cool, I might check that out. Never comes up again.
Yeah, well, you know.
Every time. I'm at the point where I'm just going to hand them the script when they say it. I'm like, here's what you're going to say next. You don't even need to think about it. But I'm sorry, go on.
I mean, so this was my first time in Phoenix. That was like the first thing, right? Going from the airport to the resort. It was a resort. Yeah. So this place had, so there were several different buildings you might stay in. So, I mean, I actually had to walk quite a ways to where my sessions and stuff, my class sessions were.
We've had that in a few places.
Yeah. But I mean, it was a nice, really nice place. It had all kinds of amenities that we couldn't take advantage of because our classes went past when all those things closed.
You're like, damn it. Come on. This is what we're here for.
I wouldn't have used, I mean, you know, a spa and a, I don't know, water slide. So, I mean, I wouldn't have done that stuff anyway. But I think some people felt like, well, I paid for this and I'm not able to, like, do it. So I understood that concern, but it wasn't an issue for me.
If it makes them feel better, I'm pretty sure the other guests who were allowed to use those amenities were not allowed to attend classes on being a therapist. Right. So, you know, 6-1.
Yeah. So, okay. So this was the first time since my anniversary for starting school is May 10th. So.
Ooh.
I've been doing this for over
2021.
Yeah.
I've lost track of years. So
I've been doing this for over a year now. And this is the first time I've been doing it like in person, like, you know, my professor's right there teaching the class like professors usually do. And there are fellow students sitting right here, like fellow students usually are. And it was,
how'd they smell?
I don't know.
I mean, that's really the biggest difference, I would think, is that online you can't smell them.
Well, you don't really see that. You don't have any kind of, you know.
Oh, do you not have cameras like this or anything?
No, we don't. I've never done I mean, one of my professors would have Zoom sessions and stuff for like just a spontaneous discussion or whatever. But we never have like. Zoom classes or whatever.
Oh, okay. Pretty much. Also you wouldn't be able to smell them or taste them on online class.
But so, you know, there are a lot of people who I've only communicated with online.
Like, feel them. You couldn't do that either. Yeah, it doesn't work.
Through like discussion forums and things. I haven't talked to them in video or anything like that. Yeah, like there was one person who was in my particular. So there's a whole cohort of people. It's like 500 people, but we were broken down into much smaller groups. There were 16 people in my class, but many of them I had interacted with before in other classes, or of course I might have interacted with them in this particular class. One of them, one person was someone who. Is closer to my age. I mean, I'm still older than her, but she's closer to my age. And I've had her in several classes and we ended up talking quite a bit. So it was great to meet her.
About kids today and how they don't get it.
No, we never, I mean, we have, aside from being very close together in age, we have a lot of other things in common.
Mm.
But anyway, there was, I think the next closest person in age was around your age.
Someone that's was pretty old.
Around your age. Then after that, just about everybody was, you know, quite a bit younger. I mean, there were a few people in their 30s with kids and stuff. So it wasn't all people in their early 20s. But everybody was really nice, very smart. I mean, gosh, I just can't believe how much smarter everybody is than me. But it's good because I'm learning so much.
That is surprising because you usually have a really good grasp on how smart you are in comparison with other people and really
shut up,
really sell yourself.
Yeah. Okay.
It's very surprising.
Okay.
I wonder what the distinction could be.
Anyway, it was great to learn so much from, you know, all these different people and all their different experiences. And they were very good at talking about and, you know, exploring those things. So it was really the first time I've spent, you know, an extended and kind of intense period of time with other people who are either learning to be counselors, therapists, whatever, or they're already professional, you know, PhDs or whatever. Because it wasn't just my instructor that I met other people like that too. And it really, to spend basically 5 fairly intense days just being in that place, It was really different. I mean, it makes coming back here and working on, you know, like I'm doing homework like I always did, but the whole mood of it seems different. Yeah. Like before. Although,
hopefully it also makes you feel more comfortable potentially reaching out to others on school stuff, because like we met in person, we talked or whatever, so now I don't feel as weird about like sending you a message asking you about things that we're working on.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting at the point, which is, you know, I felt for a whole year like I was just sort of toiling away by myself. I would talk to people in discussions once in a while, but it was mostly solitary and lonely and everything.
Yeah.
Else. But yeah, now it's like it just doesn't. That whole notion of me just sort of doing this by myself and feeling sort of alienated from other people who don't know what I'm going through is just gone. You know, there's this whole other group of people that I know are there. Even if I'm not interacting with them directly, I know they're there. I know I could interact with them if I wanted to. In fact, I've already, we have a group assignment sort of to do this week. And so I've already Zoomed with those people again. I've been chatting with some people today a little bit. It's like,
are they here right now? Do you feel them?
But it just, you know, that's a huge transformation from, you know, feeling like I'm trying to get into I'm trying to get into a particular club or a particular thing.
Yeah, I know.
Versus, oh, I'm already in it. And here are all these people and we know each other and we're together in this whole thing. So it feels like I'm more like I'm part of something rather than I'm trying to be part of something. If that makes any sense, I don't know.
No, it absolutely does. It absolutely does. We all struggle with belonging and not belonging. So it makes a lot of sense.
So it feels pretty good actually. And there's a paper assignment I've been struggling with the last couple of days. I think before I would have been totally insane over it, but now I'm like, I'm concerned about it and I'm not happy about it being so difficult, but I'm also like, it doesn't feel as dramatic as it used to.
You know, other people are going through it, like in a very real sense.
Yeah.
Other people are having that same assignment.
Sure. And maybe I could ask them for help if I need it or whatever. And it doesn't mean I'm going to, it's just the feeling of knowing that those people are there is almost all you need, you know?
Yeah. So. And the 5 days is critical because I'm pretty sure if they spent much more time with you, I mean,
well, there's
so this way, just enough to give a good impression and get out before they find the truth.
I don't know if I told you that before I went, Abby sort of got me a whole new wardrobe. Did I tell you that?
You did tell me. I don't remember if it was on the podcast, but you did tell me.
So every day I had something that I thought was sort of like nice Sunday clothes type of thing to wear.
Mm-hmm.
But of course I was the only one who did that. Yeah, so, which didn't bother me, but it did attract some surprising attention.
They all thought you were a narc.
No. Someone stopped me at a restaurant, just asked who I was and, you know, just wanted to talk to me, I guess.
Just a stranger.
Well, they ended up being, they were there for the same reason I was. They were there with the school and all that, but they didn't, I don't think they knew for sure if I was. They asked me that. That's the first thing they asked me. But I think.
Wow.
But I think.
I think you're getting some of my juju like rubbed off on you. That shit happens to me, not you.
It was a party of three people, and one of the people was from Iowa. So I think, and every day I wore some kind of Iowa pin on my lapel. So I think that was probably the real.
That tracks.
That was probably the real thing.
That definitely tracks.
But we had a great conversation about how the week was going and everything like that. And then the next day I saw that fella again and he said, "Hey, William," you know, and I waved at him. I couldn't stop because I was on my way to a class, to another class, but it's like, well, that was nice that he even remembered my name.
It's but good for you to make friends.
Yeah. And I made a lot of friends, good friends there. So, you know, we spent our evenings together too, just, you know, talking about things and
getting drunk, talking about sex.
No.
Oh, I assume so. Okay. That's what the rest of us do in our evenings. I don't know if you
all right, well,
that's what we all do.
It was a very positive experience, I think, for everybody involved. I mean, we all seem to think so. Now what I have to do, the group assignment is we have to sort of role play a therapy session.
Oh, I had thought you were going to do that there. You had talked like you thought that was going
to
be.
Yeah, we did do that, but we have to record one and submit it like as an assignment.
Were they better than your actual therapist?
No. This is, you know what, and when I watched the podcast for last week, I realized that maybe I unintentionally misrepresented some things. Okay, so one of those things
is this. Not a real therapist, people.
One of those things is this. I think some people might have gotten the impression that in the approach that I was talking about, you couldn't say things like, "Well, that sounds really frustrating," or whatever. You can say that, especially if it's reflecting what the client has actually said. That's the key. It's not that you can't say anything in the interaction. It's that you only say things that reflect or paraphrase what the client.
Yeah, you have to be sure that you're restating what they said.
Right, and you
and not leading them.
Right, or giving your own opinion or whatever else. Also, this is all about training a person to do like the conversation early in the first session, or maybe the whole first session, but not like as it goes. I mean, once you've had several sessions, naturally you're going to ask questions, you're going to try to find solutions and things. This is about trying to make sure that, and when the client first comes in the very first session, you're letting them completely express their own views and also building rapport with them so they feel like they can open up. And then later, once you get to know each other better, the conversation can be, you know, more like what you're used to say with your therapist or I'm used to with my therapist.
Well, after several weeks. No, and that's largely what I've cultivated with you, our relationship. Now, admittedly, I'm not trying to solve your problems. I have a much more sinister long-term goal in place. But essentially, that's what I did up front. Now, I can sort of steer things in a direction to your ultimate end.
I mean, like right here, I've got a checklist of some of the things that your video is supposed to include. Although, of course, if you have this checklist in your mind, you're probably going to mess it up. But, you know, if you, it's like anything when you're practicing skills, you know, the idea is to sort of drill them. And then when you get into the real situation, you can forget about it and it'll just come automatically. Right.
In my first session with my current therapist, It was over Zoom. And she said, I hope this is okay. Just in the first session, I want to take some notes just because I'm getting to know you and I want to learn stuff. Right. And I said, yes. And it confused me because I'm like, why would it ever be a problem for you to take notes?
Well, you know, some people think the therapist isn't paying attention when they do that. You know,
I guess I always just think the therapist wants to remember. I'm kind of in awe at the stuff she keeps track of from week to week because I know she's seeing a bunch of other people, and she's like, "So you had that think?" And I'm like, "You didn't write that down. You remember?" Like, to me, it's almost slightly more disconcerting that they don't write it down. I'm like, so you don't really care. You're not going to remember this.
People have different ideas about, you know, like they might not think that the counselor's paying attention. They might
be worried somebody else could see the notes. That one occurred to me.
Yeah. That's
if we're just talking, it's you and me and nobody else can hear. If it's recorded in any form, then potentially somebody else could find out.
Sometimes they're distracted by, you know, what they say, and then the counselor starts to write something down. They're like, why are you writing that down? You know,
well,
what's interesting about that?
No, this becomes a thing. I think part of it is a lot of us view therapy from TV and movies.
Yeah.
And in TV and movies, a very common joke is, you say the patient says something or doesn't say something, and then the therapist is writing something down and they're like, what is it? Like, never mind. And sometimes we see it and it's just a word like crazy, and then they double underline it or some shit, you know?
Right.
So I think that stuff colors people's view of it, maybe. I don't know. Also, it was the sort of therapist that pretty much asked permission for everything she did. So that might be part of it.
Yeah. That's probably.
But at the time, I was like, "Yeah, take all the notes you want."
I'll probably be like that too. But this approach is, as I think I said, is ascribed mostly to Carl Rogers, and it's about, you know, trying to show support and rapport and acceptance and all those things without the way we usually do it in social situations is we'll commiserate with a person or we'll ask the person questions or whatever, which is perfectly fine in social situations, but in a therapy situation, it's a little bit leading and you know, maybe not giving the client room. So it's a kind, there's a trick to trying to be as empathetic and warm as you can be without doing what people usually do to exhibit those things, which is very not therapeutic.
I'm obviously not a therapist and not training to be one, but I would say in general, I would describe my style as less Carl Rogers and more Mel Brooks. I know they worked heavily together, but I tend to focus more on,
they were great friends,
the Mel Brooks side than the Carl Rogers side.
So I expected I'd have a difficult time holding back questions because I'm just always curious about a person and I just want to ask all these questions. And that wasn't too bad. The thing that really got me was, okay, so the people in my class were really good at playing clients. That was, I mean, tears. I mean, everything. I mean, these were, I've been in workshop, like drama workshops, where the people didn't get there like these people did. It was amazing.
Are we sure they were bringing up fake things and not just genuinely venting their real life difficulties on?
Well, they were, of course, they were instructed to bring up only fake things. They were.
Because I got to say, I'm impressed if you can do tears too. Like that's pretty hardcore.
They were instructed. Well, and also examples of people you could use that you were encouraged to use because these prefabricated examples had certain multicultural aspects that maybe weren't represented in the actual class. Right. So
just as long as no one did the accents.
Anyway, so everybody was, I mean, I didn't work with every person, but I mean, there was one person in particular who expressed some concern about, you know, being able to do the role playing, and this person was fantastic. fantastic. So oftentimes a person would present an issue that would, that I was surprised would make me very upset. Right. Like I was, I mean, it was, they were just making it up, but they were doing a very good job making it up. And I just, I would, you know, get very upset with what the person was going through, which that's fine, you know, empathy and all that. But of course, as a professional, you have to find a way.
Yeah, this is a thing you're going to run into.
Yeah, to push through that. So I was kind of surprised by that, but also glad, you know, because I would have hated for the first time that happened for me to be actually working.
An actual client.
Yeah, which is one of the reasons why we have this, these sessions.
End of the hour, these, they leave your office and they're just kind of calm and rolling their eyes. You're like, I'm so sorry for you.
So, but that's part of the reason we even did all this, was so you could figure that stuff out. So that was, I mean, I thought that was good. It was surprising, and it was difficult. And it was also a little disappointing from an academic standpoint, because I really hoped that I would be able, academically speaking, to be able to do all the stuff the right way, you know. But I mean, I did okay. I mean, as long as the person wasn't, you know, expressing something that hit a particular nerve, I did fine. I mean, I did everything I was supposed to do, but I do need to work on that aspect of it. Of, I just have to somehow not, you know, like one, the first time it happened, a guy was portraying it as a soldier who was struggling with PTSD, which at first time it was fine. But after a while I was like really angry. Because, you know, I do have very particular views, you know, political views and things. I'm, you know, a pacifist. I also respect most people who go into the military. I know a lot of people who've gone in the military. I know they have very good and noble aspirations, many of them, but I feel like they're being taken advantage of by the government and just thrown in and made into cannon fodder. So I have these very strong feelings about it. But did it ever occur to me that, oh my gosh, if I'm dealing with a guy with PTSD, that's really going to mess with my head? No, not until it happened in this thing.
I mean, so, I pride myself on my misanthropy and also don't care about anyone other than myself. I think I would still struggle with that initially, but I think it's a skin thickening thing.
Yeah.
The more you experience it, the more you'll be able to deal with it. Also, I am fascinated, and I wasn't going to bring it up, but you did it twice. You emphasize different letters when you say PTSD compared to everyone else I know. I say PTSD, you say PTSD. And I've literally never heard that before, and you did it twice. Yeah. And so I'm fascinated. In my head, that's like the British English pronunciation versus the American English pronunciation. If you have an interesting way that you emphasize the letters in PTSD, tell us about it in the blog, magictalkinghead.com, because I want to know. I find it interesting. But no, so, I expect I would go through a similar thing. And as we know, I don't give a shit about anybody. So,
well, and like it felt like a perfect
thing. Seems swollen for me to do.
Okay. It felt like a safe place to talk about those things and deal with those things too. So that was nice, you know.
Did you miss me?
Oh, did I miss you?
And this, you know, did you miss this?
Did I miss this?
You so much.
Yeah, I think I did.
That's
there weird. There was one night that I didn't do anything with anybody else. I spent it by myself. I had dinner by myself. I worked on a kind of an assignment that we had. And I was kind of homesick that night for Abby, of course, but really for everything back here.
Not for Abby, of course. That's what you just said.
I meant to say it was obvious that I missed Abby, but.
I know, but it's funnier the other way.
I think I meant to say not just for Abby, but for, you know, Yeah, you, everything. Because I did, we, you know, we've done, you know, we do record things ahead sometimes, but for the most part, our experience over the last 11 years is to do this every Thursday.
Yeah. It was weird not to do it last Thursday. Yeah,
it's weird not to do it. It's weird not to do it. So yeah, of course I missed this and missed my wife. And you know, also I talked to my family more often usually than I could over that week because everything was so busy. Mm. So yeah, I think I was pretty homesick on that night that I just had dinner by myself, but I think it was good overall. I think even that was good for me to take a little time and work through some stuff and think about some things that I was dealing with in the class. So yeah, I mean, it was just, it was a very different experience. It was most of the stuff I didn't really anticipate were going to happen. But in a good way, a lot of good, surprising things. So,
and yeah. Now you're a therapist?
No, but I think I feel more connected to that whole world than I did before.
That was good.
I'm not sure I felt disconnected before, but I think I kind of did feel a little disconnected without really knowing it.
You just didn't know you were missing something.
Yeah, right. I didn't know what I was missing. That's exactly it. And now it's, so there's a little sadness afterwards, like, oh, that's just too bad that it's over, but it's not really over. I mean, I know all these people, we're communicating, we're doing stuff together.
It's never over. So it's just when you think you're done, comes back.
But you know, sometimes you have these really, you know, you go somewhere and you have these really good, powerful experiences and then it ends. And then it's like, it really ends. Like it's, there's nothing about that experience that's going to keep going.
I murder everybody before I leave. Yeah, no, I've been there.
Well, let me think of an example. Like, so you remember, I mean, I'm sure this is still something that happens, but I haven't attended for a long time, Llamas Fest or whatever.
Yeah.
You can go to that and have a really good, profound experience and you connect to all these people and then it's over. And then a week later, you're like, well, what happened to all those people? What happened to the profundity of that experience? It's all gone now. I mean, you know what I mean? That's kind of the thing I'm talking about.
I wasn't confused. I was just being funny.
Well, I didn't know. Because I mean,
jokes. Well, I also was being funny because I very seldom experience that personally, but I understand the concept and I have experienced it.
Well, I mean, when I was growing up, I experienced that very frequently and it was usually in relation to church type of activities, right?
Yeah.
Everybody gets together for some big church almost. It almost feels like a revival type of environment and it's very inspiring and moving and every, you know, love and all that other stuff. And then it's over. And then like, then it's not like that for.
No. Again. And I think it's very common. And I think I probably did some when I was younger, but not a lot. I'm never pining for the past, even when it was a real good experience. This is the thing that's been coming up in therapy a lot for me, the great irony of my brain. I don't enjoy change as a rule, but I get bored very easily.
That is ironic.
And so in most experiences, no matter how much I like them, about the time they're going to be over, I'm about ready for something else. But I think I am very unusual in that sense.
Mm.
I think it is more common the thing you're kind of talking about. And it's sort of the other end of FOMO, the fear of missing out, is sort of a fear of losing it afterward or whatever. And I, neither of those things do I suffer from a lot. A little bit, not a lot.
Mm.
But in this and only this instance, I think I'm the strange one.
Yeah, it was a very good experience and I'm glad I had it. And, you know, it does, everything does feel different in a way that I think is permanent and good. So.
Wow.
I think that's good.
Yeah.
How was your week?
I
feel like that's an odd thing to ask.
Not all that. good in a way that is permanent and good. But I had therapy last Tuesday, and it was fairly boring. And it was bad, too. I was talking about, like, real stuff that was bothering me, and then she's like, well, sounds like you're doing pretty good. And for a second, I was like, what the hell? And then I stopped, and I'm like, yeah, I pretty much am. but then I had like a full-on mental breakdown the next day.
Oh, sorry about that.
But luckily I then had to drive for 2.5 hours with my wife, and so we talked about it and I came to a new epiphany, and I finally have a second thing to work on in therapy, and so I'm very excited next week because I have therapy again and I get to tell her we've got a new thing. And I won't go into detail here, but I think I am suffering from the Protestant work ethic. Conceptually, I don't have it. but this, I think it, even though this was not something that was ingrained in me, and this is something that I reject, I was raised in society where I think I put my value as a person measured as what I do. And now that I do not have a job, that is a, and I am not paid, that is a problem.
Okay.
And it's something that I didn't think bothered me, because versions of it, like, when we've talked about this, the whole idea that like my wife earns all the money and I'm just a home, like, has never for a split second bothered me. That isn't there. But that's not the same as you are what you do, and I don't really do much. And I don't contribute money or anything. And so I think that was where I got hung up. And also I had been sleeping very poorly. And I think that's what sort of triggered it, was a lot of sleep deprivation mixed up with the rest of it made me lose my fucking mind. But I got better. And here I am now. And I'm starting to sleep better because I started exercising again this week. And I think that is already beginning to help. Usually it takes a week or two to really kick it, but that is going on. I went and saw my Nibblings choir concert in Chillicothe, Illinois. And that was the thing. It was on a Wednesday, and we drove there for a 7 o'clock concert, saw it, and then immediately drove back home and got home like just a little before midnight.
That's a long day.
Yeah, it was. But it was really fun. And the week before, I had seen a elementary school band concert, and the difference was amazing. Because elementary school band, they just started looking for if you can make noises with it. And as they should, they're young or whatever, but these people, like my niece in particular, she's in the jazz choir, and I was in the jazz choir in high school too, and it makes me mad because I thought my jazz choir was pretty good, but holy shit. I will toss this one at you. Here's one for the music heads out there. They did an a cappella rendition of David Bowie's Nature Boy. I think that's insane to give an a cappella version of David Bowie's Nature Boy to high school students. David Bowie's Nature Boy has one of the least intuitive melodies I've ever encountered. It's an incredible song. I love it. But like, if you're like, just sort of follow along, you can't. It's weird. In a cool way, but it's very weird. And when you add in vocal harmonies with that, which were also fucked up, I'm like, this is very complicated. I would not give this to high school kids. And they pulled it the hell off. And it was so good. And I was so mad at it. They were really good. And just in general, they get better songs. They're getting like pop songs from a year ago. The freshman girls choir got to do a medley of It's Raining Men and I Will Survive. Like, that is too fun. There was only one song in the whole concert that was in Latin. I was really shocked. I was like, man, they get away with so much shit these days. But they were really, really good. And that was fun. Not a lot else happening. I've been playing a lot of Final Fantasy. The story in that game is really amazing. It's odd for an MMO to have a story that I will say is one of the better, if not best, narratives I've had in a video game.
Wow.
And the fact that it's an MMO where you like cheat out on all that shit is really impressive. But it's to the degree that like some shit made me sad and I kind of had to stop playing, or at least stop playing the main storyline for a little while, because I'm like, I need time to process what has happened here.
That's pretty good when that happens.
It was pretty impressive. I saw, let me catch you up with TVs here. We finished a bunch of shit. We finished The Tourist, the HBO Max thing I told you about. Apparently it is not a limited series and it is getting a second season. I do not understand a second season because it kind of wrapped everything up. And I do not think we will watch a second season.
Oh, okay.
I didn't hate it, but I don't want to talk too shitty about it because it was on a listener recommendation. It was interesting. Here's what it is. When you go with dark comedy, it's such a crapshoot, because if the dark shit you're dealing with really hits someone and then you're making jokes, like, that can feel weird. And so like Severance, which we talked about before, and Trish could only ever watch one episode at a time. Meanwhile, I could have binged the shit out of that, but it's because, although I recognize the metaphors and the concepts we're dealing with, they don't impact me anymore, largely because I don't have a job. And so I can sort of laugh at it because it's my previous experience, whereas way too much of that hits where Trish literally lives now. Right. And so it can be tricky. And that's some of the things, is like, whenever you're doing black comedy, you're laughing at dark things and you run the risk that somebody's not going to think those are things you can laugh at. And I feel like I got there a little bit, especially the end was a little bit of a spiral into just a giant tragic mess kind of out of nowhere. I'm not going to say it's not worth watching, and I think a lot of people would enjoy it. There are great performances, and it's an interesting sort of mystery to solve, but I don't think I will continue. We started, I think we're almost halfway through, Our Flag Means Death. And okay. I had some friends who tried it and bailed immediately. It's starting to look like they didn't have a lot of experience with Taika Waititi, and they're getting some now, and he may not be their thing. And I'm still trying to work it out, because as somebody who tends to hate what's considered cringe comedy, Taika Waititi sort of does a lot of that, but I don't hate it. And so I'm trying to work. I don't know. I've been pondering this. I think it may split into two distinct things that I understand. But I will say the pilot's a little weak because it's a pilot. Like, the first episode has to lay a lot of groundwork, and so it's a little clunky. But after that, I am here for it. And it's real fun. It's hard to explain to people, but I think if you were going to explain Our Flag Means Death, it's set in pirate times, and it's a pirate story. But it's like, you know how people are people and people are always people, even over the centuries or whatever? This one is like, imagine if people in those times were like people now. And to a certain degree talked like people now, but also just had the same attitudes and interests and deficiencies and strengths that they do now. And isn't that a funny sort of way to look at humanity, of putting a modern visage over an old historic time that we've all dramatized and romanticized in our head? And it nails it. And also, it has the most insane cast ever, and the chemistry between people is amazing. You're grinning, yeah. So I'm pretty sure you guys watched the whole thing already.
Yeah, yeah.
It has a ton of people in it. I love it. It's funny. We've talked about this before, how there are certain actors that I really like, but for whatever random reason, I tend to hate almost everything they're in. This came up recently. Rebel Wilson is a good example. I adore Rebel Wilson. Almost every project she's in, I either watch and hate it, not because of her, I just hate it conceptually, or I see a trailer and I'm like, I have no interest in that. And I don't understand it. Well, I finally have hit the reverse. I am not particularly a fan of Fred Armisen. However, if Fred Armisen is cast in a non-main character role in a TV or movie, odds are that's a very good TV or movie.
Okay.
I've been seeing a lot of it lately. If it's the kind of thing that you're like, we could fit Fred Armisen in this, over on the side here, like it's usually pretty nice. So yeah, we are enjoying that quite a bit. Saw a movie last night that I very much want to talk about.
Okay.
I think we've discussed how I'm giving a lot of credit lately to novelty. I'm getting very bored with similar things. And I've had a lot of movies recently that I'm like, that was a bad movie, but I enjoyed it. And not like ironically, I enjoyed it just because it was different.
Sure.
And so I seek out a lot of these things lately. And so this is on Shudder, which again, cannot recommend higher, but you might find it other places. And I see a trailer for this movie. It's called A Ghost Waits. And it's a very recent movie. And I see a trailer for it. And I glean some things from the trailer that I'm not going to talk about, because I think this is a movie better to go in cold.
Okay.
And I'm like, this seems like they're really doing something different. And it looks interesting. It also very clearly is low. It's very clearly micro budget. That's a new term for when low budget isn't low enough. It's very clearly micro budget. And I will say, okay, it's very clearly people without too much experience yet in filmmaking. But in my opinion, quite good at all the aspects of it. The production was great. The filming itself was great. The acting was superb. What I'm going to say is it's a genre bendy movie. It technically is a horror film. I think it's just barely a horror film, and it's much more two or three other genres. It has a very small cast. It is relatively short. I believe it is 80 minutes. Trish and I both really enjoyed it. I want to avoid spoilers and have people go in cold, so it's tricky to say. I was thrown for a loop by the end. I was not expecting it. Trish was. I was not. And it made me need to deal with it. I'm not going to say it's a bad, the ending went in a direction I did not expect. And I don't know if this changes my view of the movie, was what I thought at the time.
Okay.
And I've thought about it since, and I don't, it is an ending that I think very certain people with very certain issues may not like. I'll go so far. Some people may find the way it ends a little triggering.
Oh, okay.
But that's as much as I want to say. It's an incredibly thought-provoking movie, and the ending being like this, if nothing, it is more thought-provoking. We've already had discussions about the significance of that ending within the rest of it and all that, and how we thought it might go and all that. It's very thought-provoking, and I love that, and I'm going to be thinking about the movie for a very long time. I also, and this is, I don't want to give me or really you, because let's be honest, we'd both be doing this, too much credit of filmmaking, or even that this is a specific story we wanted to tell, but it feels like a movie you and I would make. It absolutely feels like I could see me making this movie, and the way they make it in particular, writing is of a, I mean, I'm just gonna say it makes us sound bad, but you and I are very tell don't show people in our screenwriting, and you're not supposed to do it that way, but you and I are men of words. And I think on a micro budget, that's hard to work. Like, that's, you have to sort of have that. And so there are a lot of things, like this movie very clearly cared about its story continuity and things like that. And that's all sort of built in a way that felt like me. And it had, it was entertaining and yet had messaging that again, felt like something you and I would do. Trish was very intrigued because the people involved in the directing and the writing and the production, all of the big names for that are all men. And she thought it very much felt like a woman, a woman's film, like a film a woman would have made. Although it is a male primary, our POV is a male. And I get that. There's a definite feminist bent to it that I get. And I just, I highly recommend it to sort of everybody. I'm afraid it might only be on Shudder. I don't know, but it's called A Ghost Waits. And yeah, it's only 80 minutes long. And it's very good. It's probably one of the better movies I've seen in a while.
Nice.
I would recommend it. All right, let's do a question. I got this one.
You got it.
I actually remembered to do it. Thank you, those of you who are sending things in. We can always use more, but we do have a small handful at the moment, so that's nice. All right, this is from Beth, one of our regular contributors. I don't know why. I've done everything I could to scare her off, but she's still here. The subject on this says 4/14/22 question 3. Because she wrote in 3 emails that day. So we're on our 3rd. Ah, I don't know a song for this one. How many countries have you visited? Where do you want to go next? Beth, I ain't got a song for this one. Also, it's funny to, like, I know about a couple, but one time I was like, how many countries are there? And I went to look it up, and there is no answer, because there are, I know about places like Taiwan and things like that, but, like, there are a ton of countries that the world does not agree on whether or not they are countries. There's a whole giant Wikipedia list that's like, yeah, these people don't agree with this, and no. And it's weird, but so it's hard to tell. But you should go first, because I mean, pardon me, but I suspect you've been to fewer countries than I have.
I think that's probably true, yeah. Because I've only been to, oh, and we're counting countries that I might have landed in but didn't.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we should stick with the theme, but I would say put an asterisk, point it out when it's just an airport.
Like, okay, put an asterisk next to it. Because, you know, I've been to Canada. I mean, that's the first time I left the country, was to go to Canada. I mean, I've never been to Mexico. I know a lot of people who have been, but not me. I've been to Canada, and I've been to Russia. Now, when I've been to Estonia, but I was there when it was still Russia.
So, yeah, when it was still USSR. Yeah, that's what I was wondering. I think you get to count that now. Yeah.
I get to count Estonia?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Finland. Because we.
When were you in Finland? Were you passing through? Or was that part of that same tour?
We stayed in Helsinki for a night or two. That's where that guy got injured, in Helsinki, I think.
He was injured. Injured bad.
And on the way to what was then the USSR, we landed in Belgium, but I mean, we didn't deplane, so.
Oh, you didn't even deplane? Mm-mm. Oh, wait, counts then.
Sorry. We landed in Montreal and didn't deplane. We switched to Aeroflot in Belgium. So sorry, okay. I got mixed up there. So yeah, we did deplane in Belgium. So Canada, Russia, Estonia, Finland.
And a little bit of Belgium.
And Belgium, that's 5.
And then the US, of course.
I mean, I guess, yeah. Count you have the US.
Yeah.
I have been
only
there.
Only in airports, but still. That Tom Hanks movie is based on you. Yeah, so 6, including the US. Yeah, I can beat that with my eyes closed. I hadn't gone to Mexico either until I believe 2011 was the first time. Oh. I'd gotten close. I'd gotten to where I could see it from San Diego, but I hadn't gone there. But so I have covered all three North American countries. Forgot those. When I was five, my parents took me on a trip to the UK and France and Switzerland and Italy.
Wow.
Weirdly, a lot of that trip stuck with me better than things of when I was much older. Yeah, it was over about a month we did this trip, my parents and I. And then in college, when I studied in the UK, which is already on the list, I went to the Netherlands on a break. And assuming we aren't counting Scotland and Wales because they're all still part of the UK, I think that's it. Now, I was going to go to Iceland in 2020.
You were?
Yeah. Trish and I had plans because Iceland is one of the places that is you have your best shot of seeing the Aurora Borealis. And Trish always had a dream of seeing that before she turned 50, and she turns 50 this year. So she wanted to sort of wrap it up. So yeah, we were going to go in November. We were already planning the whole thing out. And then COVID. Stupid, stupid COVID. Mm. It also says, where would you like to go? What countries are you still hoping to get to?
Well, the first thing that Abby and I both think about when it comes to traveling is, you know, genealogy destinations, which there are still plenty in the United States we want to get to. But as far as overseas goes, you know, there's Northern Ireland, there's various places in England, there's various places in Denmark, in Germany. But I also think of literary places I want to visit, like
Narnia. You know,
a big location in Bram Stoker's Dracula is Whitby. So I kind of want to go there. I mean, he describes it very well, and he just really sort of brings it to life in how he describes it. So I'd really like to go there. And also Ingolstadt, which is in Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Because there is kind of a building there that represents the school that Victor might have been attending. So you can really get a sense of what that would have been like if you go there. So there's things like that, literary locations.
I told you I took a course like that when I was in London, right? I took a course that was specifically studying English landscape and its role in English literature.
Oh.
And what we did was we read some great old English novels. Tess of the D'Urbervilles is one that jumps out. And then we literally went to the part of the country they were set. And in Tess of the D'Urbervilles, we specifically went into a small church that is genuinely the church that the book has in it. And like they talk about a particular king's grave, and like we saw that grave and stuff. And that was very cool.
Yeah, see, that'd be totally cool to me. Like also in Frankenstein, he starts to build the female for the creature in like these northern Scottish islands, and they're not specific which one, but you could visit just about any of them.
There's tons up there. Yeah.
Yeah. That's sort of where there are people living there, but not very many people, you know, because there was a cottage there that he was in, and there were people that were helping supply him, but it was not a heavily inhabited island. So you just find one of those and look around. It's like, yeah, this is probably what Mary Shelley had in mind when she wrote this. I just really love that. And there's also specific places in London that are in Bram Stoker's Dracula. That
would be of course.
Just to see. I mean, some of the places he made up, but the areas the areas in London that the action took place in, you can still, you can visit. And so, yeah, I'd like to do that. But I'm trying to think of some other ones, but those are the two things I think of: genealogy and places I want to go where my ancestors lived and Abby's ancestors lived, but also literary places. Well, like Hesse, for example. Hesse in Germany is also a big place. Not only is Abby's, some of Abby's ancestors there, which would be great, but that's also, I think, where a lot of the Grimm brothers talk to people about fairy tales and stuff. So there's kind of a sense of that being the place where a lot of the Grimm fairy tales happen. I think there's a tour you can even take that sort of goes places that's supposed to be evocative of some of the Grimm fairy tales. Oh, and Hamelin, where the Pied Piper.
The Pied Piper.
Is from, that's an interesting place to go.
Now that their rat problem is solved. And their child problem.
I think we talked about how, you know, there was actually a time in history when it was a common thing for people to say, oh yeah, that was that 30 years after the children disappeared. I mean, that was like a thing they marked in when they talked about the history of their town. Like, it really did happen. These kids ended up disappearing. So that's fascinating to me. Oh, and also the Harz Mountains, where, you know, like on Hexenacht, that's supposed to be a place where the witches all gather for April 30th. That'd be fun to see. So stuff like that. That would be a big trip if I went and saw all that stuff.
Do all that at once, yeah. Although that would be the most economically and time efficient way to do it.
Well, the thing is, it's, as I understand it, and maybe you can speak to this a little bit, you know, Europe, compared to the United States, Europe is, everything is a little more close together. I mean, you know, you think of.
Well, it is physically, it also is politically. Once you get into the EU, it's a lot easier to move around countries.
Yeah.
And cheaper and all sorts of things. Yeah. So in general, a European trip, the most expensive part is getting to Europe. Once you're in Europe, things are easier.
Yeah. I mean, it's when you think of visiting a whole bunch of places in the United States, you know, it takes hours to drive from one thing to the other. You need to fly. Whereas driving most places in Europe isn't that.
No, it's not that tough. But also, they also have much better public transport.
Sure.
Trains and shit like that. So it's way better.
Oh my gosh, trains. That would be amazing to travel on trains in Europe.
Don't get it twisted. They're pretty shitty now because they got all privatized. But they're still better than we have here.
Still, I like trains, so I think I'd like it either way.
Oh no.
But what about you? Where do you want to go?
There's a handful of places. I like traveling in general. Trish and I recently became very interested in Iceland, and I think we will eventually do that. That sounds very cool. I would want to get back to the UK. I love the UK. And I want Trish to go to the UK, and hoping that someday. And then we have other things. Trish used to really want to go to Italy because that's sort of where her family, or at least parts of her family, are from, but not to seek out specific ancestors or anything, just like, you know, I come from Italian stock, let's go see what that's like. And I'm certainly not opposed to going to Italy. I've always wanted to go to Japan because I was a little white boy who was obsessed with the weirder parts of Japanese culture, as so many little white boys are. And I still am curious. I don't think it's necessarily the best. Like, I think a trip to Japan is expensive and complicated, and as I have grown older, I have sociopolitical issues with a lot of Japan and its government and its society. But I also still want to check it out. And I think the culture is really cool. So I would still like to go someday. And in general, I've just sort of never been in Asia. Trish really wants to go to India. I don't know that I care about going to India, but we'll see. And then this is a weird one. My father always wanted to go to Hong Kong. And in particular, he wanted to do it before 1997 when it reverted back to China. And I mean, I wasn't opposed to it. If he'd been like, hey, you want to go to Hong Kong with me? I've been like, sure. But like, I didn't get the appeal so much because I was more interested in the Japanese, not the Chinese. When I got older, I did kind of see it. Hong Kong was a very interesting and unique place in a lot of ways. And it still is. And I still think I would like to go. It's not going to be as cool, though, as pre-97. It's also not going to be as safe as pre-97. But so I think I would like to. But I like going to other places. I do not like traveling there. I do not like flying. I do not like long car rides, things like that. So that's a hurdle that is offset by the fact that I like visiting other places. Spain also, I recently have seen some travel things that make me think Spain might be cool to check out too. And honestly, sort of anywhere. There aren't really that many countries that I'm like, nah, I don't want to check that out. Unless it's a country that I'm like, I genuinely think I could be in danger being there. Most anywhere else, I'm like, yeah, no, I'll check it out. Sounds cool. Tell us what countries you want to go to on the blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com. Y'all have, there's no way none of you have opinions on this. You've thought about it. Even if you're somebody who's like, I've thought about it and I don't want to go anywhere outside. I'm not sure we have that many in our listeners, but that could exist. But everybody's thought about it. Come on. So you got thoughts. So go to the blog, magicaltalkinghead.com, and tell us. Tell us what countries you visited, what countries you want to visit, what countries you want to revisit, what countries you want to ship William to. Because I have thought about that a lot, but that's a different question. In the meantime, if you do this on YouTube, like, comment, and subscribe, because apparently that's a good thing. We put out videos every Thursday, so that should be easy to figure out. Find ways to find out, because I am inching closer every day to really quitting both Facebook and Twitter forever, in which case I won't be notifying people of the podcast. So if that's where you remember, find other ways, because I'm genuinely considering getting out of both of those places because they are toxic as fuck. But we'll see. In the meantime, yeah, go to our blog. You can always go to our blog, magicaltalkinghead.com. In fact, I recently renewed the domain again for another year. So I started doing it yearly because then it's easier for me to remember and not freak out about not remembering how to do it when I get the notification. So if I do it every year, it becomes more of a habit.
Yeah.
So that helps. Also, I wrote a book I think I've talked about before. It's called Odd Wings. You can find it on smashwords.com. If you look under Anthony K. Parsons or William, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you know what darkness lives in the souls of men? Shit, did I get the wording wrong? You get the joke, right?
The shadow knows.
Exactly. And you have just been shaded.
I don't know what happened there.
I think your ring light burned out.
My ring light. Yeah, I wish I had a ring light.
I have a book and you should read it. It's pretty good. It only costs $3. It's not that long. I mean, honestly, better to read that book than listen to this podcast. It's better than this podcast. And I'm working on a sequel and that'll be cool and stuff. So it's $3. Check it out. And if you did buy it and haven't read it, read it. It's not going to take long. But seriously, it costs $3. You can read a book. Come on.
And it is.
You're clearly invested in me enough to listen to this fucking podcast. That's insane. How can you not also want to read the novel? And William's novels, but I don't shill for him. He needs to do that himself. But he wrote a trilogy that's very good that I have read.
If you want to see my stuff,
mine's better, but his is good.
aethertheater.com. That's A-E-T-H-E-R, theater.
Yes.
You can find my books, which are under the pen name Clifton D. Hawk. You can find my music, which is Pilot House. You can find my webcomic. All my stuff is there.
Stuff, and, yeah, the webcomic sells
it. And if you have anything to say about it, I'm perfectly happy to hear it. Absolutely. Even if it's not entirely positive.
I'm just saying, we both have done a bunch of other creative endeavors, arguably all of which are better than this podcast. So if you're listening, then you should do those things too.
I watched Inquire Within the other day because I was thinking of sending it to my classmates because we were, the whole thing was about how to.
That's true. That's true.
So I was like,
you should.
Don't do it like this is what I was going to say. And I was going to send that video.
You should absolutely send that to them.
It was pretty good. I mean, you can tell it's old, like I made it a long time ago, but it's still pretty good. You did a fantastic job. I mean, you were just amazing.
Percocet and Diet Coke. Actors, little helper.
Actors, little helper.
Hey, perfect timing. That's I think good. We got the title of the episode.
There you
all
right. Go.
In the meantime, yeah, do all our other things. We got cool shit out there. Check them out. And come to the blog and be a part of the conversation. And also listen next week, because if you don't listen, you specifically, we don't get paid.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.